Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head to head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Clash. So on Monday, we went way out west as Billy the Kid and his young guns did the right thing. And today, we've got more good guy outlaws, but we're staying closer to home with a quick trip across the channel for 1993's The Three Musketeers.
You're under arrest.
Five of them, three of us. Hardly seems fair.
Maybe we should give them a chance to surrender.
Excuse me, but there's four of us.
Athos, Porthos, and Aramis.
Hello.
Nice to meet you again.
Pleasure.
Now, we are prepared to resist you.
Walt Disney Pictures presents the story of the greatest heroes who ever lived.
Long live the Musketeers!
We'll have a winner at the end of the show, but which film will it be? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Potters. My sister's honour will not wait a moment longer. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And that's your lot. Just me, V, and thee this week. No tea. But as I said on Monday, Tilly Tots. I'm just going to stick. As I said on Monday, Tilly Tots, Chris Tilly's fan base. Chris will be back next week. How are you, Victoria?
Really well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, this is the bit where Chris normally does a review.
Yes.
I thought I'd do it.
Of course. Yeah. I'm glad you did, because I haven't.
I didn't think you would have done. I say every week, obviously, we'd love you to subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. And if you can, if you leave us a rating or review, it'd be massively useful. And if you leave us a review, it might be read out on the show by Chris Tilly, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly. But he's not here. So in his absence, I'll read one today. This is from Anonymous.
Right.
I love this pod because of Alex. He is the best of the three. 5 stars. Wow. Thank you.
Thanks, Pam. Alex's mom.
not really. That isn't the review. I've got to get the review up on my phone. I don't know how. You can't cut and paste from Apple Podcasts. So where the reviews are,
right.
I couldn't put it on my paper script. So I'm having to look it up right now on my phone. Can you tell I'm filling? Yes, no, don't help me, Victoria.
Sorry, I'm just astonished. This is so professional.
Here we go. So this is from King Zachary 13. This is my go-to podcast and definitely worth a listen. The concept of two movies with something in common going head-to-head to see which is better is so delightfully simple, yet excellently executed. Alex, Vicky and Chris are all great and make for a thoroughly entertaining trio, even if the discussion sometimes gets a bit spicy, like a curry. Like Tim Curry. And that is your obligatory Tim Curry mention.
That's the perfect review.
Right, for this
it's
week.
It's so nice. That was so nice and thorough.
Mm.
And we are pleased with the concept. And we are. Sometimes I can't believe we thought of it, but it is a good concept, isn't it?
It's a great concept.
Sometimes, yes.
I can't believe
we got it right.
Thought of it, yes. Now, also very quickly before we get into this, we have a live show coming up. Are you excited, by the way? I forgot to ask you on Monday.
Yeah, I am. About the live show?
The live show?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I love that bar. Mm. I think the bar's amazing.
It's
I love the films. It will be small and intimate and fun, and I'm not nervous like I was the other time.
How small it is depends on you buying tickets
That's
to come
so true,
and see
yeah.
us.
We're happy to do it.
we are going to do it anyway, regardless yeah. if there's no one there.
Because there's themed cocktails, so we would be there anyway.
And also, an older woman fell over on the street last time you were there. I got trapped on a crossing and you rescued her, so she could be there.
She might be there. She owes me a fiver, actually. So.
Did she just take the Uber home then?
I've put her in an Uber. I didn't. What do you mean?
I thought you paid for the Uber.
I did pay for the Uber. Yeah. But if she turns up again and she looks well, she could give me £5.
Right. No, I know. But I think you were worried on the night because you said, I put her in an Uber because she looked like she needs to go home.
Yeah, but what? She was a grift. Like, yeah, she
what
was
if it was a.
Yeah. Yeah.
What
and
if
she's.
Punked. You know?
Yeah, she's in Hertfordshire.
Exactly.
She promised me she'd live around the corner.
But she did live around the corner.
She did, yes.
Okay.
It was £5.60.
Well, we'll be there. This woman might be there. It's all happening on the 11th of November at the Loading Bar. Like Vicky said, a very fun bar in Stoke Newington, London, here in London. And because it's our first show in an actual bar, what better clash pairing to do than Tom Cruise in Cocktail versus Coyote Ugly, themed cocktails on the menu, dressing up for some, me included. All details and the possibility of you buying a ticket is happening at eventbrite.co.uk. eventbrite.co.uk, search Clash of the Titles, and we hope to see you there. So back to this week, Chris's choices, Young Guns versus the Three Musketeers, and you really wanted this one of the pair, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's Am I allowed to say what?
No, you're saying we'll do it in the histories of this movie. You can say it there. Okay. So on Monday, I took us for a ride across New Mexico. And today, Victoria is taking us to the City of Lights, so called because it was the first city in Europe to adopt widespread street lighting. Hmm? Just because Tilly's missing doesn't mean trivia is dead. V takes on a journey.
American Frenchman D'Artagnan is run out of town by Englishman Frenchman Gerard, but he doesn't care because he's off to Paris to join the Musketeers, recently disbanded by British Frenchman Cardinal Richelieu as part of a coup to depose Irish Frenchman King Louis. Anyway, he eventually meets up with the only three American French Musketeers, not to get the memo, Moody Athos, Drinky Pathos, or Pathos, and Top Shagger Aramis.
Porthos!
Porthos, sorry. Shit, Pathos makes more sense. Wait, let me just check the rest of my notes. Fuck. Porthos, sorry.
Right, cool.
And after a run-in with a woman so overpoweringly womanly she doesn't even get a first name until she's nearly dead and is simply called Milady, the four musketeers are off to Paris to stop the king from being assassinated, which would install Richelieu as monarch, even though he hasn't got that bit of paper signed that he did really need signing 30 minutes ago, but not to worry, because the Fab Four have re-recruited all the other musketeers without even talking to them. Then the king and his terrible hair punch the cardinal into a dirty river, which totally kills him at the end.
Yeah, we'll get to the ending when we get to the ending. Let's not jump ahead.
Let's not.
Chris would be very proud of us right now.
So I'll just get this done. I love this film.
Jeopardy.
Yeah.
You quite like it, but you quite like Young Guns.
I did. I enjoyed Young Guns more than I thought I would, right. Even though I thought I'd seen it before and loved it.
Yeah.
So there
cool.
we are.
Well done.
It was a family cinema trip to Preston Warner Brothers Multiplex when I was a child. And when I was thinking about this, it's on a par, for obvious reasons, with Robin Hood in terms of good memory and affection, but also because it is the same film.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, the start is unbelievably
And there's
like
loads of Robin. I mean, obviously, two words, Michael Wincott.
Oh,
my God. Four words, Tim Curry, Alan Rickman. Amazing. Yeah. And also, you know, I fucking love Michael Wincott. More words, Bryan Adams. So yeah, they're the same films. And
Bryan Adams, Sting and Rod Stewart.
Whoa, power combo.
Yeah, our very own musical musketeers.
Yeah, that's true.
The three of them.
I mean, there's a lot more. I saw it when I was 12, 11 or 12, whatever. I think I've seen it one more time and I haven't seen it for years. There is a lot more falling into haystacks than I remember. Mm. But whatever. Love this film.
No, you like it. You quite
I quite like it. Yeah.
I like it. And you quite like Young Guns.
Yeah, I did.
I watched it on as a teenager on video. I absolutely loved it. I quite liked it. I quite liked this film. I did think, I was trying to work it out. I think this is when I fell in love with Charlie Sheen. Because like before Tiger Blood.
Yeah.
Winning! Yeah. And, you know, porn star orgies and a lot of crack. I used to answer the question when people go, who would play you in a movie of your life?
You're supposed to not say someone who's better. No, wait. What are you supposed to say? You're supposed to give a funny answer.
Yeah.
You can't go Charlie Sheen.
I did.
You're supposed to ask me.
Okay, who would play you in a movie of your life?
Peter Kay.
Kathy Burke. What?
Kathy Burke. Kathy Burke.
Yeah.
Or if I was being serious, you're like, oh, Maxine Peake or something, but you give a funny answer. You're like, yeah, someone from Coronation Street, whatever, because right. It's funny. You don't say Charlie Sheen. I don't say Julia Roberts or whatever, would I?
Right.
Which would make no sense, actually. I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. I'm actually looking at you now, trying to work out who
I look like.
Yes. I think.
Catherine Deneuve?
Reese Witherspoon. You could do Reese Witherspoon. Could do you?
Do you think so? She probably could actually.
All right, I'm having a bath wank. That's my impression of Reese Witherspoon doing you.
That's horrifying, haunting. Poor Reese Witherspoon.
Fine. So I didn't know that. I didn't know that you weren't meant to just pick the coolest person in your mind. But I did, and it was always Charlie Sheen. I was a massive, massive Charlie Sheen fan.
Yeah, I think we all were, weren't we?
And I kind of was at the start of the whole like winning thing, and then
a little bit. Yeah,
it was when he did the Torpedoes of Truth tour, and he was like, "I'm now a stand-up," and it's like, well. There's quite a lot of skill in that. You can't just go on stage and go,
being wrecked.
Tiger Blood.
Yeah. Winning.
Tiger Blood. Huh?
What about that Tiger Blood? What's the deal with Tiger Blood on planes?
Because you know he walked out. Because he sold out venues because he was the biggest thing like in the news right then. And he sold out venues. And you know he walked on stage and he'd have gone, Tiger Blood. And people were like, rah, Tiger Blood.
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, he's like, Tiger Blood.
Yeah.
And it would have been really painful.
Yeah.
Really painful to see. Anyway, I love Charlie Sheen.
Great.
I'm done.
Okay, cool. Don't know what Chris thinks. It's irrelevant. So let's talk about the background to this film. Uh-huh. It's based on a novel, I don't know if you knew that, called The Three Musketeers by Alexandre Dumas. Have you read it? No. Have I read it? No. Chris, have you read it? Yes, I went to a posh school. Brilliant. What's you read it? No, I've read the novelisation of this film, probably, rather than the source material. Whatever.
It's so true.
It's
on the curriculum.
I mean, I don't know why I said that, because we went to the rubbish schools, but we still had to read serious stuff. This just wasn't on.
I've read The Crucible.
Have you? We didn't do The Crucible. Well, this is boring, isn't it? We did Lord of the Flies, like everyone.
I don't think everyone did Lord of the Flies. We did The Crucible, just proved.
We did one book, and that was it.
It was great.
Was it?
It's where I've got the...
Fear of witches.
I took the phrase from Tituba in that, where she says, I don't truck with no devil. And I'm like, cool, I'm going to start using that. So like, when people go, do you want to go to the football? I'm like, I don't truck with no football. Makes me feel both educated and very cool.
And really current, I think, as well. Shout out for the younger listeners there. Anyway.
I really fancied Abigail, and obviously she's just a person on a page, but I think because she's...
Well, the writing's good, isn't it, idiots?
Yeah, I know, but like she's like the villain of the piece. She gets like, you know, Proctor killed, but I was like, oh, I love her because she's a bit of a bitch.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, you know who you are. Yeah, we do. So there have been
The Crucible?
We should. There have been lots of screen versions of this book if you're interested. So I've got 1916, 1921, 1935, 1948, 1974. Have you seen any of those?
Yes, I've seen the Michael York one, which is where he plays Dog Tanyan and Oliver Reed.
Yes, that's 1974, isn't it? The Richard Lester one. Yeah. And there's a 2011, I believe it's a Clockpunk version.
Oh, that's by my favourite director, Paul W.S. Anderson.
That's the one.
Event Horizon, that's a great film. Yeah. I watched this movie. I don't mind this movie.
Okay.
I think Freddie Fox makes a very good king in this movie. Obviously, I love Succession and Matthew McFadden is brilliant.
Oh, I love it. I love him in this movie. Yeah.
Luke Evans, big fan.
Yeah.
He's good. It's not a bad movie. It's a bit silly.
Yeah.
But it's quite watchable.
Yeah, fine. I mean, I haven't seen any of them. This is my Three Musketeers.
Okay.
So now we're going to get not technical. We're just going to get a bit inside baseball for a second because I couldn't find any of the background apart from this very inside baseball stuff. So as I said on Monday, Young Guns was made by 20th Century Fox, where Joe Roth was chair, Roger Birnbaum was head of production. They leave Fox, they get a big deal with Disney, and they start Caravan Pictures. to make 25 pictures, the first of which was The Three Musketeers. So basically, this version of Three Musketeers only exists because of Young Guns, because by the time Roth and Birnbaum did their deal with Disney, The Three Musketeers was already in development. Disney wanted to do it. They just wanted to do like a cool Three Musketeers. Like, why wouldn't you? Mm. But they're not the only studio in town interested in making The Three Musketeers at that time. So there was a version with TriStar, which was in development at the exact same time. Johnny Depp was attached.
Oh, is this because obviously it was in the public domain? After a certain amount of time, a piece of literature goes into the public domain so anyone could make it. It was like when Guy Ritchie was doing Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell was doing Holmes and Watson, but in the end that got pushed back.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, not forever. So
yeah, there are people waiting for stuff to come out of copyright so that you can like pounce on it and be the first.
Yep.
I mean, it's been out of copyright for a while, obviously, but yeah, it's in the public domain. You can do with it what you want, kind of thing. So basically what you've got is a bit of a race in Hollywood and who's going to get there first. So Disney give it to Joe Roth because he has got this long legacy of attracting superstar talent. And in particular, obviously, because of Young Guns, he can get Kiefer Sutherland and Charlie Sheen and get them really quickly. So he signs them up super quick. Joe Roth said that sent a message to the other studio that we were on the fast track to make the picture. They put out the announcement. The TriStar Musketeers was uncast apart from Johnny Depp being slightly attached, I think. So I don't think it was like an official thing. But anyway, they sort of like get the jump on everyone else. And then apparently Joe Roth, being ahead in this race, sent someone to Europe who went around all the period costumiers in Europe and just like bought them up so that no one else could get a period costume made in Europe. And then TriStar just gave up after that because it all seemed a bit pointless. So
really funny, that stuff. There's a great book called The Greatest Sci-Fi Movies Never Made, which talks about a similar thing with, I can't remember the name of it. There was a movie called The Outbreak and Hot something. It's in the book, but it's about them, these two studios competing and doing exactly that. It's fascinating when two studios really go at each other and neither backs down and how far they get and what is the final straw that makes one studio give up.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting. So because this is Musketeers as like a buddy movie, the casting is key. So just a few of the names that were mentioned. So for D'Artagnan, apparently Stephen Dorff turned it down. Apparently Brad Pitt turned it down. Chris O'Donnell, to me, definitely 100% worked for me when I was 12. But now, and it's perfect for a Disney film, but it seemed like a bit of an odd casting because he just in like scent of a woman and it didn't seem super Disney, but he's got the right looks for.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He's a Prince Charming.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. And I read about Gary Oldman being attached to it, so I'm going to assume, although I can't prove it, that he was in line for the Cardinal role, because that would kind of make sense, given that they then did cast Tim Curry.
Mm-hmm.
Porthos, thank you, not Pathos. Love this film.
Pathos, Athos, it wouldn't work.
But then Pathos, because the drinking and the... I've read too much into it.
Yeah, you have.
I'm giving notes definitely to Alexandra Dumas, basically, which is...
And also it's Athos.
Athos, yeah, not Athos. Mm. Athos, Porthos, Aramis. Perfect. So anyway...
Aramis was always my favourite in the cartoon Dog Tanyan and the Musker Hounds. He was the most attractive dog. He had the long snout like Simon has. That's why I think I picked Simon subliminally, because he looks a little bit like Aramis. Although I think Aramis was a King Charles Spaniel or something. No.
No, the king was.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Aramis was some kind of long-snouted dog.
I remember. I watched D'Artagnan every day. And there was a movie that came out really recently and I tried to make my children go and see it and they were like, that looks rubbish. I was like, you're idiots, because it will obviously be brilliant.
Was it? Did you go see it?
No, I didn't make them go and see it. They went to see Paw Patrol instead. It was stupid.
Paw Patrol.
Do you not know what Paw Patrol? God, I'd save yourself the pain.
Oh, it's, really?
Please, okay. Let's not get into that. This is Michael McIntyre territory. Let's not go there. Interesting fact, Oliver Platt was also attached to the TriStar version as Porthos. There you go.
Wow.
Alleged.
That's good.
Yeah. Just because we haven't mentioned the writer and director, let's mention the writer and director because it feels weird not to. So written by David Lowery from Star Trek V. Big tick. Passenger 57. Yes.
Yep.
And he's got an uncredited rewrite on The Good Son, which I do like.
And Money Train as well. That was one of his. Lakeview Terrace.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, fine. Absolutely.
He's great.
Yeah.
Fun writer.
And it was directed by Stephen Herrick, who is basically now, I didn't read, because a lot of, you know, some of the stuff, like if I've loved something when I was younger, I've never really looked into like who directed it, because I was 12 when I saw it and I was like, it's just a person that did it. Mm. So doing this podcast makes me like reassess who's done what and like, you know. It turns out Stephen Herrick might be like one of my favourite people in the world.
He had a great run in the 80s and early 90s.
So Critters, fine.
Yep.
The Mighty Ducks, I love that film. Mm.
Bill
love,
and Ted's Excellent
Bill
Adventure.
Bill and Ted, yes. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, fine.
Mm.
But this, love this. And Winona Ryder was mentioned as Milady, but instead we have Rebecca De Mornay. Mm. And then a budget of $30 million, it made $54 million. That is not a mega smash.
No, and that's probably why we didn't get a sequel. Even though I was going to tell you before we started, I always thought there was a sequel to this, but obviously there's a sequel to the Michael York, Oliver Reed version, the Four Musketeers. So I think I just assumed that this one had one too, but I was,
no.
Consider me shocked. Consider me shocked when I found out there was no sequel.
And that's it.
I'll just throw this in. This got a rotten 28% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What?
Mm, this is not a critic fave. Neither was Young Guns, although that's got a slightly more respectable 41% on Rotten Tomatoes. So as far as RT is concerned, if you're in a rush, then Young Guns is the better film.
Oh, that you're trying to reintroduce some Jeopardy back into proceedings. That's good.
Now, I was.
Oh, sorry. We cut that out.
Crack on.
All right, fine. Let's crack on. So here is D'Artagnan. He's not French. He's not even trying to be French. He is so glowingly US Disney. Like,
but could you have accepted? I mean, thank God someone went,
Don't bother.
Do whatever accent you have.
Definitely.
Because,
although that's not true, though, is it? Because later on, well, we'll get to Athos. I'm saying that right or not. Mm. That's not what Kiefer Sutherland sounds like, I don't think. So, but I don't think everyone's doing, not everyone's got that memo kind of thing.
I think that sounds exactly like Kiefer Sutherland, doesn't
it? I think
it?
he's trying to be like a bit of a baddie. So he's trying to be British, I think.
Okay.
Anyway.
Right.
Anyway.
It doesn't start like that, though. It starts with Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where Alan Rickman visits the witch, but it's just Tim Curry on a boat with Guy of Gisborne going to visit his secret underground prison, which is like, I was literally like, this is Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves entirely. How weird. And then it sort of starts and you're like, there was really no point to that scene other than to go,
Remember Robin Hood?
Tim Curry's a villain and this is a bit like Robin Hood. Have fun, kids.
Exactly. Which worked for me.
Yeah, totally. I love it. I'm just like, what a pointless prologue.
Yeah. So Withnail's mate is chasing them out of town, but D'Artagnan's dad was a disgraced musketeer, so he's off to Paris to follow in his father's footsteps, apart from the disgrace part.
Yeah. We got a good horse chase. I did laugh where Withnail's mate lands on his ass.
But this is the thing, this is the best bit. So Paul McGann, earlier in this chase, can't even get on his horse, can't even fucking do it. Later on, riding it standing up. So are you good at horsemanship or not?
Yeah.
It's inconsistent. Anyway.
The horse stops and he falls on his ass.
It's really funny.
It did make me laugh. Even now as an adult, I remember thinking it was probably the best thing I'd ever seen where Chris O'Donnell like jumps off the horse, runs across and gets back on the horse. I was like, that's fucking amazing. And it is actually a really good stunt as well.
This is the thing. I'd forgotten how much for kids it is until I watched it again in the week. And it's a bit of a shock because when you're 12, you're like, this is really grown up.
Mm.
And you watch it now, you're like, this is blatantly for children.
Mm.
But it didn't stop me from enjoying it.
Charlie Sheen does get top billing in this though. Even though obviously Chris O'Donnell is D'Artagnan.
Yeah, but he was new, so.
Yeah, true. I mean, he's the lead, but Charlie Sheen gets top billing. And I was like, I wonder why. And it's because he's only in it as much as, say, Kiefer Sutherland. And obviously he wouldn't get top billing, but it's because Hot Shots had just come out.
Yeah.
And obviously I didn't realise, I mean, I knew that was a hit, but it was a massive hit. It was like 150 million or something on a tiny budget. Mm. And you're like, okay, so Charlie Sheen was hot shit again.
Yeah. Yes. So D'Artagnan is on the way to Paris. He meets an actual French person, which is great, called Constance, who's Julie Delpy.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, she's French.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Although she's very weird, she goes, thank you for the entertainment. And you're like, what entertainment? The fact that he just beat the shit out of two men.
Yeah.
That's entertainment for you. You're weird.
Two men, don't they work for her as well?
They work for her. And then they're bodyguards to the queen, who she is with. And then they just ride off and leave the men like prostrate on the ground.
Yeah, and now they've got no protection.
Exactly.
Yeah, I hadn't thought
Some
of that.
Some strange decisions made.
By the only French person. So there are no musketeers because they've been disbanded. Apart from three. And D'Artagnan will meet them in a sort of, which again, when I was 12, was hilarious, a sort of let's meet behind the bike sheds for a fight at break time kind of thing.
I love this conceit.
Yeah.
This whole idea of like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, it's great.
Hilarious.
The fact that he's firing all the musketeers on the same day. I still liked it this time.
So then we meet. Okay, why can't I do it? Is Athos? Just help me out.
I have repeatedly.
I know.
It's Athos.
Athos.
And Porthos.
Like Athens. Yeah. All right. So we meet Athos. Mm. I do think he's got a sort of English accent.
It's pronounced Athens.
I thought you were being serious then. Athos. He's the moody one. Porthos, the bon vivant. I will say when I was little, it was Oliver Platt. I loved the most. I thought he was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. He's very, very, very good in this.
Yeah.
And very funny. With good, not great gags, and he wrings every single yes. laugh out of them.
Yep.
Charlie Sheen for me, because I was like, Aramis has always been my favourite, because I fancy myself as a poet.
Do you?
Well, I think I did at the time, maybe.
Oh, no.
Well, sort of, because he's sort of slightly more cultured, whereas the others are drinking and fighting. He's a little
he's
more...
He's using the Bible to get laid.
She comes on to him.
He does, I don't know. I think he's working a bit of a con there, if I'm honest. Like, I will teach you Bible studies. I will shag you.
He looks very shocked. But your husband? That's a rehearsed look.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so he's a holy man using the talk of sin to get the ladies going. Mm. Actually, let's have a short break before we dive into Act 2.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this yeah. shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Abroad in Japan is the Stack podcast that brings you a taste of life in Japan. Recently, Chris Broad was joined by NHK contributor and legendary video game streamer Pete for a chat about his life as a TEFL teacher.
I one time taught a woman who was still pregnant, and I had to teach her stomach.
What?
Yes, and so...
Wait, what?
She came in, 7 months pregnant, and they were like, no, she wants you to just to talk to her stomach. So I was sitting there giving instruction. Very specifically.
No.
She held her tummy, and she said, I think he's getting it. And I thought, oh dear God.
Just bizarre. Search Abroad in Japan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. New episodes every Wednesday and Sunday.
I need to get better at that. So take some tips from you. But then you're a professional TV presenter, and I'm not, so...
Fine. I thought you did really well.
Are you lying?
I'm not.
You are lying. It's okay. You don't have to. I know where I can improve. It's fine. Right, where are we? So the Musketeers, they're going to kill D'Artagnan, but then they don't. They put aside their differences to beat the Cardinal, who is played by the superlative Tim Curry, and Rochefort, which is not a cheese, actually, Porthos, you moron, but played by the absolutely incredible Michael Wincott. I cannot love that man more than I do.
He's so good. I mean, granted, it's Guy of Gisborne.
Yeah.
But he is very good at being that guy.
Yeah.
I got really fascinated because, you know, I mean, I share your love for Michael Wincott.
Oh, do you? What, even in The Crow? You never voted for The Crow, even though it's amazing in The Crow. One of the best films ever made.
Yeah, he is the best thing in a long music video. So he's really good in Alien Resurrection.
Yeah.
Another terrible film, but he is fantastic in that. And I've told you, that movie is ruined for me that both him and Dan Hedaya die in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Spoiler. Because he, like, you're like, you can't have him in this movie. Mm. Like, to take both the two best character actors out of this film, and you're left with who, please?
Yeah.
Tell me, Winona Ryder? That's not enough. I'm sorry.
It's not.
But yeah, I looked up. He is in. Do you know he's got a movie coming out next year?
No.
Jordan Peele's new horror movie.
Amazing.
Nope. Starring Michael Wincott. I just looked it up, so I don't know how big his role is in it, but that's still pretty cool.
That makes me very excited. Mm. Yeah, I could see. He's so in the early 90s for me, and I haven't really kept up with him. So I'd be very excited to see.
You haven't kept up with anything. He's not made a lot recently of note. But
I think it's testament. I mean, I know.
Of scale. Better. Not of note, of scale.
I think it's, I mean, I'm hugely biased, but you can do Guy of Gisborne and then you do it again. You know, your death is very similar. It's just the same part. Mm. And you, no one minds. You're not like, oh, come on, Michael Wincott, show us something else.
If anything, it's like greatest hits. It's like, put that back on.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Yeah, exactly. So D'Artagnan, the freaking amateur, is captured pretty quickly by Rochefort. And he's very cocky considering. So he's in the, is it the Bastille or is it just the sort of secret prison?
I think it's the Bastille. So this is after the first big fight that they have with all of the Cardinal's guards, right?
Yes.
How about some of Oliver Platt's dialogue in this scene? This is possibly my favourite line in the movie.
Go on.
We'll come back to it. It's when the captain of the guards turns up. And first of all, there's the line, only a fool would try and arrest us twice in one day. I'm here to arrest you. Good.
Yep. Good.
Funny. But the best line is where the captain of the guards goes, are you coming peacefully or do you intend to resist? And Oliver Platt goes, oh, don't be so stupid. Of course we intend to resist. Just give us a minute, all right?
Yeah.
Love that.
Rolling in the aisles when I was younger.
But you see, I just read it and I'm like, actually, that doesn't sound as funny. That's how good he is,
that's
he
true.
Rings everything out of this script.
Yeah, on the page, that's not cracking anybody up.
No. He's so good.
His best line is about the red wine, though. That's really funny. In the carriage chase later, I can't remember where it
was. Oh, yeah,
that's hilarious.
Yeah. Where Kiefer, he brings up the shade, he goes, champagne?
Yeah.
And Kiefer says, we are in the middle of a chase. And he goes, you're right, something red.
Which I wouldn't have understood when I was 12. I would have gone, ha, 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 grown-up joke. But now, that connects.
Also, this is how you cast Kiefer Sutherland as a miserable drunk.
Moody drunk, yeah.
And not like he was in Young Guns. This is a much better Kiefer Sutherland role.
This is perfect.
He's so much more fun in this movie.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Even though his character's not particularly fun, he's much more fun.
Yeah, and his character's got some odd decisions and he's a bit judgy. We'll come to that. It totally works for Chris O'Donnell and the character. It is a bit jarring to watch it as an adult because he's just a puppy, isn't he? Like, he tells everyone his name straight away. Mm. So when he's like, I'm D'Artagnan. It's like, okay. And especially later, we'll come back to this, but when he meets Milady de Winter and he's like, I'm D'Artagnan again. And then he's like, this is our plan and our plan involves stopping you, Milady. It's like, come on, dude. Like, try a bit harder.
Although here, when he's captured and he's put in the Bastille, I think it is the Bastille. I'm not sure. And guy of Gisborne is like, what are you doing here? Tell me what's going on. Tell me where the musketeers are. Sorry, yeah. That's what he wants to find out. And he's like, I'm not going to tell you. I refuse to tell you. He's like, I'll kill you, though. And he's like, I'm still not going to tell you.
Yep.
Which is fine. But then this exact same scene, beat for beat, happens seconds later because he goes, I'm going to go sneak off. I'm going to escape. Ah, oh, Cardinal Richelieu's got me. And Cardinal Richelieu goes, tell me where the musketeers are, he goes.
No.
Never. No. I've rehearsed this 5 minutes ago. My answer is still no.
I am certain.
Yeah. Did I tell you my name was D'Artagnan? I love the musketeers and I hate you.
Yes. So, Milady de Winter. So, yeah, in the Bastille, D'Artagnan witnesses this plot about a secret treaty with England on behalf of the cardinal.
Rebecca de Mornay. Oh, she's so good.
She's very good. Mm. I mean, let me just say this, though. I feel a bit like, I love her, you know that.
I
feel a bit like she's playing a bit under par, as in, because she's known very, you know, very famously for The Hand That Rocks the Cradle and being like super evil. If she'd gone full tilt evil, it might have been too chilling for a Disney film. So I feel like she's pulling back a little bit.
No, it's because you got to feel sorry for her. Because you, if she was full tilt evil, when she goes over that cliff, you're like, yep, good riddance.
That's
when in
true.
Fact, you're like, oh. When we get to that bit, I'll tell you, she doesn't make a lot of sense in her big last word speech.
No, okay, that's fair enough. So here we've got another scene from Robin Hood where an execution is foiled because your rescuers are dressed as your executioners, which is lifted from Robin Hood. I mean, it's a very common thing, but, you know, to come 2 years after or 3 years after Robin Hood, it's a bit cheeky, but never mind.
Did you like, I thought her line, with a flick of my wrist, I could change your religion.
Yeah, I like it because it's like, oh, I get you're going to quiz balls off? Is that what she means?
I thought it was.
Oh, no, it is. What? I'm so sorry.
What fucking religion is like.
It's like Catholics. I know nothing about religion, nothing.
But you know there's no religion where they cut the balls off where you.
I thought in some strand of Catholicism, this is really, I'm really inferring Catholics. Oh. I think Catholics get up to all sorts, right? Because I don't know anything about them.
You might be right. In medieval times, I wonder if eunuchs was part of some.
Thing.
Religion?
Probably.
Maybe.
But so that's what I thought she meant. But now, of course, I see it now. Yeah. Obviously, she means...
Circumcision. Yeah.
That's so obvious when you... Now that you've said it, I've been stewing on that for weeks.
I mean, the movie did say it as well. Yeah. In exactly the
I
same way.
I thought she was going to cut his bollocks off. Because he's sort of lusting after her. And the lust part... It's related to the testicles in some way. So she's like, back off, buddy.
Yeah, I don't think... I think even if she circumcised him... It puts you off. You're not immediately going to go, ah, it's just my foreskin that's been removed. I'm ready to go.
That doesn't stop me.
So, I'm bleeding. Oh, so yeah. Actually, no, you're right. You didn't.
You win.
I am not into it anymore. But yeah, it is definitely circumcision.
I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
Anyway, the gang are off to Calais. I don't like leaving Paris.
I don't either.
No, because also, especially because we go back again. It's like, if we're going to, I was sad to leave. And I was like, well, but if we're going to leave, we need to stay in Calais. I don't like going back
or
and forth.
Or Cornwall, as I believe it actually was.
Yeah. I think you can sort of tell a little bit. I mean, I know that it looks pretty similar, but... So anyway, en route to stop Milady. What, Northern France and Cornwall?
Yeah,
they look the same, don't they?
Yeah. It's just sort of the way you went. I think you can tell it's Cornwall. I was just like, people in berets riding bicycles with stripy shirts.
I meant the countryside looks English, I think is what I meant.
All right.
I don't know what I meant. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
So anyway, en route, I do not enjoy this scene. And I didn't enjoy it when I was young, to be honest, where you've got Oliver Platt talking about wenching in this pub, like en route to Calais.
Do you not like this scene?
No, I don't like it.
Oh, really?
Now, don't be like that.
I just knew you weren't going to like this scene.
I don't like it.
But why don't you like it?
Well, because it goes on for a long time, is my principal complaint. And then it's about whether or not these people, the women in the bar, as far as they're wenches, the parlance of the time, but we would think of them as sex workers. They will be entranced by whatever you want them to be entranced by. This idea that it's like, is it action or is it words? It's like, it's such peacocking, it's such bullshit. And it goes on forever. It's fine if it's like men being like, well, I can do this and I can do this. But it's like we're expected to believe that this woman genuinely is impressed by either action or words.
I don't know. I see it more as the musketeers having fun with D'Artagnan and also showing each of their unique things.
Yeah.
So it's like a sort of, it's a test of three different things. So with Porthos, it's drinking. Mm-hmm. With Aramis, it's obviously poetry. And then with Athos, it's drinking again.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
But I don't mind it. I can see why it's sort of a little bit like, yeah, it's just...
Maybe they could meet, they could have met en route women who in that society would have had a bit more power. So, you know, there'd be more spice in the scene if they weren't paid workers kind of thing.
I mean, this got one of the biggest laughs from me in the entire film.
Last week or when you were 12?
No, this week.
Okay.
This week when I watched it. And it was Oliver Platt falls through the table and then says to Kiefer Sutherland, "Can I have this dance?" And Kiefer Sutherland fucking punches him out cold and then just goes, it is just such a really funny, pissed guy knocking someone out and finding himself hilarious moment.
Yeah, that's true. But the pub scene, tavern. What do you have in French, in France?
Wench hole?
Wench's hole? That's something else. Anyway.
Burrow.
A burrow?
I don't know. You threw it out there to me. I'm coming up with places.
Oh, I tell you, while we're talking about fannies, you know I lent you that book by William Kennedy called Roscoe, right? So I'm reading his other books. There's one, I think he got better as he went along. The book that you're reading is like the fifth in the series. So I'm reading the first one in the series. Okay. And my God, there's a character in it who's obsessed with this woman. And he's a playwright, which I always hate, like writers writing about writers. And he just says this whole list for this woman's vagina that he's obsessed with. And you're meant to be like, wow, what a poet. But I was just like, what? Like,
what are some of the things?
I can only remember one. Right. It's Isosceles Jungle. I shouldn't be laughing because he's like won the Pulitzer. But I was like, an Isosceles Jungle? What? Yeah, so there you go.
That's a keeper.
That's a bad name.
We are Isosceles Jungle. I'm definitely going to use
it. It's unbelievable.
In a bedroom scenario.
Oh, okay. Well, let me know if it works because I'd be very surprised.
Wow.
Anyway, so this is one of my favourite parts.
Is it because of the shape? Because of the triangular
of
shape?
Course,
and then just replacing it with the hair is the jungle.
Yeah, because it's a period... It's a novel set in the past, so they
like a period piece.
Like a period piece, and I believe they weren't as into like trimming. Well, they're trimming fine, but not, you know, these days.
Is it all right if I don't take any advice from you about the private areas of men or women based on with the flick of a wrist? I could change your religion comment earlier. So it sort of seems like a grey area for you.
A grey area. That's good. Because when I was reading about the Isosceles Jungle, even though it's quite clear in the book what it is, I was like, what is that? And then she gets it out and she says, here is my Isosceles Jungle. And I was like, oh, right, yeah, that's what you meant.
Oh, that's fine. So she'd called it that already.
No, well, because this is a sidebar. She's a character in the play, so she knew that he wrote it about her.
The fact that he's won the Pulitzer and the fact that you lent me his book.
Uh-huh. That book genuinely is amazing.
Sorry, not lent it for me, bought it for me.
Oh,
it was
like,
a gift.
It
was a gift. And I'm struggling to read it, so I bought a John Grisham novel to read instead.
Did you see, because I messaged, I was like, John le Carré, because I try to think better of you all the time. Mm. And I know that's snobby, but in the rankings, le Carré is above Grisham. He just is.
Yeah, it's just really easy to read.
I know.
Whereas Roscoe is quite difficult to
I
read.
Know.
I know you keep saying... Just bear with it because it's so dense and there's so many names and I feel like I have to remember everything. Mm. So the fact that like John Grisham just goes, this person's called Jenny and Jenny said, and Jenny did this and Jenny walked up here. I'm like, great.
Jenny's lovely.
Jenny's Isosceles Jungle. He's never used that. That's not what I want from Grisham.
You would be surprised. Yeah,
I'd be like, fair enough, John.
So anyway, this scene, so the pub scene, in the wench's burrow, this is where you find out the backstory between...
You're right, it doesn't work, by the way. Carry on.
Don't set me up. So this is the backstory between Athos and Milady. So she was his true love and he spurned her when he found out she was a murderer and she's got the fleur-de-lis on her shoulder blade. She was condemned to death and he's regretted it ever since and he walks this earth, he's a hollow man and he's scoured by regret, those are my words. When I was 12... This had such a big impression, like made such a huge impression. I thought it was so grown up. And I think it's perfect for a family film because it is quite saucy, but without it being explicit. Mm. And it's very romantic, but it's quite dark. And a 12-year-old me was like, wow, that's something. That's really something. I love this backstory.
Yeah, I like this backstory as well. I mean, I immediately worked out, I think probably at 12, I'm like, I bet that's Milady.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a bit weird that... He sent her to death and he was a count, but she's also murdered her next husband, who was also a count. But this one she did for real.
Yeah.
So she has come through on being a murderer, even though she wasn't a murderer. and it was a lie the first time. It's a little bit complicated.
Yeah, it's not. Apparently, it's not true to the book, which is why it probably doesn't make as much sense. Go. So she, in the book, she just marries Athos to get his fortune.
Oh, she's so she is bad.
And she's already bad. Yeah, she's already got the fleur-de-lis. He hangs her from a tree and leaves her for dead, and she manages to escape.
Ah, and in the cartoon, she's played by a cat, and everyone else is a dog, so cat's evil.
She's a bad one. Mm. So then we go back to Paris. And
different references, but
it works, it's fine. Tim Curry feels up the queen a little bit in this scene. So this, again, this
is
works.
This where she has her milky bath chat?
She has her milky, oh, yeesh.
Band name, called it. We are milky bath chat.
Blech. I mean, I don't like milk, so.
It's not milk. I think it's just cloudy water.
It's some sort of unctuant.
It wasn't the French, it was the Egyptians that bathed in ass milk.
Yeah, I would never.
Sorry. Ass's milk.
That's true. Pay attention. Anyway, this scene. So he feels up the queen and he has gone into her private chambers and she's having a milky bath thing.
He's trying to go into her private chambers.
All right. But it wasn't threatening to me as a child and to me now, which I think is down to...
Tim Curry.
Yeah,
of course. Like,
the act itself is quite threatening to walk into someone's bathroom.
Like Oliver Platt. It's amazing what Tim Curry rings from this script because Oliver Platt rings a lot from jokes. Tim Curry's dialogue, and I started listening to it, there's very few jokes, and yet almost every line he says is done in a funny way.
Yes.
Which is even more, I think, impressive than Oliver Platt, because like he's just like the way he plays it. I remember watching this as a kid and thinking he was fantastic.
Me too. And I still do. Mm. So then we put a clock on Act 3. We're sort of tying events to the king's birthday. You know, this thing has to happen by then for this reason. It doesn't matter, but we've got a clock on the event. So there we go.
What do you think of the king's haircut?
Oh, it's
difficult.
Is it authentic? I don't know. I don't know enough about French history or culture at that time. It feels to me when I was 12, I was like, of course, because you're called King Louis. When you think of King Louis, you think of that hair. But is that because of this film? I mean, when you look at it now, it's batshit that he's got that hair.
Yeah.
Because he's got this sort of bubbling romance with his queen, which is lovely. But because he's got that hair, you're just like, oh, yeah, you wouldn't though, would you? Like, you wouldn't ever go near him. So
there are some nice moments, little moments that work really well, which is like when he starts shouting at Richelieu for the first time and she smiles. And she's like,
he's sticking up for me.
There's my king. I can see past the hair.
Yeah, he doesn't look... We're such a product of our upbringing. It's so pathetic in some ways. He doesn't look like a powerful man because of the hair.
Mm.
And you want your king to look like a powerful man. And obviously, in reality, a lot of kings wouldn't have looked like... They were pampered and they were children and they were older,
kids.
They were actual kids. So they didn't become king by being powerful. They became king by being born at the right time. Mm. So it's a falsehood.
And to the right people.
Not just being born on...
Tuesday, you're king!
So that's what I think about the hair. There's a lot to unpack there, actually. Sorry about that. So
more than I thought, but I enjoyed it.
Really? So D'Artagnan is captured again, the idiot, just passing out on the floor. But this time it's by Milady. And she offers him booze and she offers him sex, but that's not good enough for him. So he just tells her everything and spurns the booze and the sex, the moron.
Also because he was going to get stabbed.
Yeah.
It's a turn off.
As you've established, it can put you off. I mean, I don't know. So now here we are. So the Musketeers, they're in Calais.
You can imagine.
I can. So the thing is, they're in Calais and they do kill a lot of people. So they kill a lot of people on that boat, don't they? That are probably, they're not innocent, but they're not directly, you know, we don't know them as baddies. They're just people on a boat. Mm. So they do kill them. So that makes it hard later for my favourite storyline that's running through this thread between Athos and Milady, where he's like, but you've murdered people, babe, so you've got to go. But me, no, when I do it, it's different.
There's a really good moment on this boat, which makes me think that David Lowry, who wrote the script, is very good. Because he set this up and it's so incidental. Like early on, Porthos goes, it was given to me by the Queen of America.
Yep.
And D'Artagnan's like, oh, there's a fucking Queen of America. Shut the fuck up, mate. And then later on, he goes, it was given to me by the Tsarina of Tokyo.
Fun fact, Tokyo didn't exist then.
Right. So it seems like they're all lies and it seems like Porthos is a liar.
Yeah.
And then when he gets on the boat, it's the rule of three because those people go, it's Porthos the pirate. And it's sort of like, oh, he is actually sort of like a liar but telling the truth. But yeah. like he is kind of famous and like, it is all guff, but it's also true. Yeah. I like that.
It's
I
a
like,
good, yeah.
It's a really long rule of three, but it works.
But fine. And it's good writing because it's just something you go through the script again and again and you're like, oh, I've set this thing up. Let's just pay it off in a fun way. It's incidental to the plot, but it adds to the character. It's all good.
What was where Tokyo was?
So, well, Tokyo wasn't the capital of Japan. It was Edo because it didn't exist because of the time that it's set. You know that.
I've been to Japan, but Tokyo
You didn't establish its capital.
Definitely there.
Yeah, it's not that this space didn't exist. Right. It's just as a centre of power, it was Edo in whenever this is set. 16-something-something. Anyway, 60-something-something. So here we are. So finally, Milady meets Athos. And
do you know how much I wanted to know when this was set just then? That would have been the icing on this show.
What? Do you want me to tell you?
No. It's just the fact that you were like 16, something. If I'd have been able to go, 42.
I think it's 45. Oh! I think. Chris, is it 45? Yeah.
Let me consult my notes. Stop it.
We love him. I don't know why we're being like this. He's so important to the show as well. It's not like we're like, yeah, Chris is away. We can do what we want to do. Like, it's just being naughty for the sake of it.
Yep.
Anyway, so Milady then says to Athos, favourite line, I've become the nightmare you once thought me to be. but you know, he's also killed a shit ton of people. So
they are chasing him and they're bad guys in the movie. The Count married her. The person she's killed was like, I love you. She's like, kill.
Die. Mm. You might have been a bad one. I think you get the sense from her, although probably just projecting, that he went too far and she killed him kind of thing.
No, she killed him because the cardinal wanted her to kill him. That's why he spared her life.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
Because he actually says that pretty much ad verbatim.
Yeah, she's like an assassin.
Yeah, it wasn't that he went too far. It was that the cardinal went, I will spare your life if you kill your husband for political reasons. And
yeah, right.
She goes, yeah, right.
Yeah, no problem. Here's a little fun fact. So Athos, at this point, starts calling Milady de Winter by her name, which he calls her Sabine. Mm. She's not known as that in the Three Musketeers, the original novel, at all. It's not. She's got lots of different names, but she's not called Sabine, apparently, not once. So there you go. Mm-hmm.
Very French, though.
It is beautifully French. So she does then meet her end. She does, in quote marks, the right thing by jumping off a cliff.
So, yeah, this is the bit I had a bit of a problem with. She actually says out loud before she gives up the information, he's like, you know, you do this. And she goes, what has this world ever done for me?
Yeah.
You've married two counts, love. Two. That is quite good.
It's not bad, is
you,
it?
You have been a countess twice over and murdered one of them. That's on you. So quite a lot, actually.
That's so sweet. It's funny that I never picked up on that at all. I was like, oh, the pain that you carry, the stories we never got to hear. I just assumed she'd been quite wronged.
Yeah, I don't know that she has.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, the only person who wronged her is Athos, or Athos.
Athos.
And because he got rid of her because, you know, she was mistried as a murderer or accused of a murder that she didn't commit. That bit is true. And so, yeah, it's just, she's a bit of a bullshitter, really.
So she deserves it. So off she goes.
No, I didn't say that. No, but...
Anyway, she's off. So now, am I right?
I thought the brother of the count who she murdered would be pissed off that she had got to take her own life on her terms. But
he probably wasn't he?
He's like, no, because he goes, justice is served.
Yeah, it's not.
So he seems happy, but I think, you know, I mean, they set that scene up. It's like, really, you're going to behead her on a cliff?
Yeah, why go all the way? Why are we doing it outside? I suppose at the time, he would have been happy because if you took your own life, you didn't get to go to heaven, did you? So,
oh, of course.
I suppose justice for him would be that kind of thing.
I don't know what the religion was, largely in, I guess, Catholicism, based on how Cardinal Richelieu was dressed. Yeah, Catholicism.
Yeah, and he's called a cardinal. I mean, I'm reaching. I know fuck all about it. It's embarrassing. I don't know anything.
Is that your black spot then?
Religion? Mm. Yeah, it is. Yeah. I just don't know anything about it. Like, I don't know the right words, the right places. I understand the important festivals in a Christian society because it's the way that I was raised.
Right.
But the minute you're like father, reverend, vicar, don't know the difference between those, if there is a difference.
I mean, I went to two Church of England, my primary school and my middle school were Church of England. So I know a bit about it. Like, you know, you have to, you're allowed to have a peach with the reverend, but only in his back room. And he has to feed it to you. That's part of the harvest festival, I believe. So that's totally normal.
Oh, no. That's how they get you, though. Because you don't know anything about it. And they're like, this is normal. Take off your trousers. Why are you being like this?
If you were a boy, you'd be a prime target.
I would.
So, sorry, child.
So we always
do this. You know
this.
Nothing about religion. Yeah,
that's right. I know nothing.
Come this way.
Yeah, and I'm really keen. And I want to be like a SWAT and I want to know everything.
Yes, have this peach.
Yuck. Anyway, so we go back to Paris. Now, you might find it weird that I've obsessed over this particular scene, but I did. And so I'm going to share that on this podcast. So they go back to Paris. And then along the way, the musketeers just hand out weapons in the towns along the way. And that gets the big band back together kind of thing.
Mm.
So I was obsessed with this because I think it's brilliant writing. Weirdly, it's such a tiny moment because it's super convenient that A, you've got all these weapons and that B, no one needs persuading. But in the rough and tumble of a script like this, of a Disney family film, if you did write that scene, man, it's boring, isn't it? It's like, oh, Aramis, go to the towns and convince the townsfolk to take up arms kind of thing.
You
boring.
Mean just firing the notes onto trees, one yeah. for all and all for one.
Yeah. Like, it's you know, if you first pass, you'd be like, that's lazy. Why do we not have the scene where you've got a bit of work to do to get the musketeers back together?
All for one and one for all. It's different because I know it from the D'Artagnan and the Muskerhound song, but I think in this is all for one and one for all, not one for all and all for
no,
one.
No, but yeah, you're right. It's all for one and one for all.
Yeah. Do you know why it's not a good piece of writing?
Why, go on.
This is where I actually wrote down, bit of a problem here.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you have a scene at the start where every single musketeer burns their tunic yeah. and throws down their sword and suddenly they're like, we're back. And it's like, well, I've got all my swords and tunics here that I didn't burn at
That's
the start
true,
in
yeah.
a specific scene where they were all burned. I'll just open this cupboard. There they are. It's like, well, why show you burning them?
Yeah.
It's a great moment. It's like a show of solidarity, throwing down the swords, burning the tunics, but then you can't have them still have them later on.
You can't have a spare tunic, no.
You're not going to have a spare tunic. Or forget the tunic, a sword.
I think you might have a spare sword because
really?
It's the times, you know, that's
it's
the difference between life and death.
Special musketeer handle.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. It actually, so it's bollocks. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a shame. So there's a failed assassination attempt here. The cardinal then captures Louis and the queen. This romance subplot is cute, but this is a very unrealistic film, but that's one of the most unrealistic things. But
what's
fine.
This? Which bit?
The idea that a king and queen would be romantically involved at this time is unrealistic, I feel. Because it's all marriages of convenience and to align Austria and
still, probably
they've got to have sex, yeah.
Yeah,
but I don't think...
Oh, you mean like they wouldn't care about each other emotionally?
Yeah.
She wouldn't be like, oh, my king.
Yeah.
Right.
And they probably would have been fine with it. It's a different framework, isn't it? It's like you've got to do certain things. It's part of your duty, as your God-given right to rule and all the rest of it.
It's also, fucking Walt Disney movie, so, you know.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, you don't want a scene where Louis and the Queen are having miserable empty sex. So she's like, I have to do this for Austria or something. Yeah. Anyway.
Yes. thank you, Mike.
They probably didn't talk. They probably didn't say anything because it would like upset God or something. The thing I got obsessed with when I was reading the...
I know nothing about religion, but I'll have a go. I'll have a quick go. They didn't speak because of God.
Yeah, because all I know about English history comes from Hilary Mantel and Wolf Hall. And that's all, I mean, that's a lot to know, but it's about one very specific time frame. Right. And so Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn had been at it for years, but she was really good at oral sex or something. And he used to freak out about it because he thought he was wasting his seed. So then when it came to, and they had to be married in order for their child, he had kids all over the place. He had a boy with her sister, but that wasn't good enough because they weren't married. And he really liked her. He liked Saucy Mary, she's called in the book. It's really good, obviously. All they did was oral sex all the time. And he was freaking out about it. So by the time they were married, he thought he was spent. That's why he couldn't bounce a boy into her. That's a phrase from the book, which is awesome.
Wow.
I know. She's so good. Anyway, where are we?
That was a journey. I like that.
Sorry. Where are we? Anyway, Aramis tries to blar on to the cardinal about answering to God. Thankfully, the cardinal blows the motherfucker away, kind of, because the Bible saves him, or his cross saves him,
his
or something.
Cross, yeah.
So anyway, let's get to the duel, because that's the important bit. And I do think the father stuff could have been a bit more explored, a bit more of a sort of, let's give it his Star Wars weight kind of thing. But Rochefort and D'Artagnan get their duel.
What you want? you want Captain Rochefort to be his father.
I think I just would have liked a bit more explicit dialogue that they are sorting this dad stuff out. I think it's quite good writing that when Rochefort first meets D'Artagnan and explains to the Cardinal who he is, he touches his eye.
Yeah, yeah. He goes, "You gave me this."
He gave me this. But I don't think D'Artagnan notices.
No, he doesn't.
So that's a bit of a shame.
But that's because it's safe for the reveal at this point where he goes, I'm going to take the sword from the boy whose father, right? The same man. Basically, you need that moment where he reveals, because D'Artagnan doesn't know until that point, until the final duel, that he's fighting the man who killed his father. Yeah.
You killed
good.
My father! Anyway, but then Julie Delpy turns up and she gives D'Artagnan the advantage by putting, like, does she nudge the sword towards him or she gives him a weapon or something?
Yeah, sort of. I think she should throw it, really. I think that's your fucking hero moment where she goes
across D'Artagnan, the circus
and just throws it and he catches it. But she doesn't. She just sort of goes,
"That's you're right." And then it spins in the light and it glints.
That's what you want.
Yeah. And then you hear the music.
Yeah.
Give it up. And then he catches it and he runs him through.
But he doesn't. It just sort of slides into shot and you're like, "Ugh, that's wasted." Yeah. Stephen Herrick.
So he runs Rochefort through. This works. Because, I mean, I don't love Chris O'Donnell in this film, but the thing is, he's a nice guy. He's made friends. Julie Delpy has turned up to help him because she loves him. You know, that all ties in. That all works.
Yeah. I mean, she loves him after meeting him once when he beat up two men. And that's it. That's their only meeting until this point. Remember where she says to the Queen, "I love him.
Yeah,
I really
like,
love him.
I'm so excited for you."
Yeah. And she's like, "Amazing." Milky bath chat.
Oh my God, babes. I'm so excited for you right now.
It's just like, it's going to be like this in the future when there are public toilets and girls talk about their feelings in them. We're in the bathroom and we're talking about feelings.
We do.
Yep.
We do.
Not a myth.
It's not a myth, I swear to God, swear down. I've said it before, that massive Wetherspoons in Manchester is awesome. The bathrooms are amazing. I've spent so much time in there, just chatting.
Oh, sorry, I thought you went in a cubicle just listening.
No.
What are they talking about?
I get involved. I know you don't think that. I know you think I don't get on with women, but I do get on with two or three very special women. Anyway.
It's all you need.
So, meanwhile, the king punches the cardinal to death in a river. The end.
Does he, though?
This
is my question.
I suppose because they wanted a sequel.
I think so.
Yeah.
But even so, it's a big problem. We'll talk about it later.
I mean, that's all I've got, because then the song started up and I'd forgotten about the song and I absolutely hate this song.
So, I hate this song as well. It's a bullshit song. Brian Adams is phoning it in. It's like, where's the fight?
Do you want to
16 weeks at number one, Brian, for Prince of Thieves? Are you half-arsing it for our movie?
Or just have a holiday. Like, you don't need it. I tell you why I don't like it, because the saying is Sting. All for one and one for all, and they go all for love, and it's the other way around, and you're expecting them to go... It just, you wait and see it all for one and one for all.
One for love and love for all.
Yeah, something like that.
Whatever.
So they go all for love and something else, and it doesn't track.
And I can never escape tantric sex Sting. So whenever I hear Sting singing about love, I'm like, yeah, but 13 hours is.
I mean, because that was a big joke, wasn't it, when we were little? Like,
I didn't know it was a joke.
No, like, as in people made jokes about it, like, right, you know, stand ups and people on the telly. And I was like, oh, whatever that is, I had no idea. But when you think about it now, if that's really true, wouldn't you like to be able to do that a bit?
No. I just, my thing is,
get out.
I don't want to eat in bed, but obviously, for 13 hours, like if it's constant, like are you having like power snacks, like a power bar? So what, if you're on top and then you're eating a power bar and the crumbs are going into their mouth?
Jelly babies. But you know, people who train for the marathon say that they
eat
jelly babies.
Well, now you've said marathon, I'm just thinking like
Snickers.
You know, well, I'm just thinking how the little poo that slipped out of. What was her name?
Paula Radcliffe. That's weird that you would go there.
Why?
Because that's not what I think about. Like, she's a professional athlete. She did what did what it takes.
Would you though?
I mean, I wouldn't because I shouldn't be running a race in the first place. That's enough of an excuse for me to bow out.
I've done
out.
It in a diver's costume. It's taken me 2 days. When you pull me out of here, I don't want anyone around because the bottom half is literally full.
Yeah, it's a mess down there. But I have finished the race. That's the important thing. And no one thought I would.
And it was for charity. All right. I did it for charity. Don't smell that. Don't smell the soup. Burn it. You can't burn metal. Melt it down.
I'm finished now. I'm done.
One final problem. Very, very clearly, as dictated at the start, in words, by the script, said by Julie Delpy, ladies in waiting cannot be engaged to musketeers.
Yes.
I just need the king to go, and I've undone that rule.
Yeah,
because you're kissing now in front of the king and breaking a cardinal rule.
Yeah.
no pun intended, of this society.
Yeah.
And so I...
They must have cut it out because it would take 2 seconds. And you're right. You're right. You're right.
Right then.
All right, shall we do the bits then?
Of course.
What was your best scene?
The coach chase where Oliver Platt brings up some champagne and goes, champagne, we're in the middle of a chase. You're right, something red.
It is very good. I like it when Tim Curry throws some pigeons in the air and then sort of glowers after them and says, all for one, more for me, which I really like. But I actually like D'Artagnan killing Rochefort, not because of Chris O'Donnell, but because Michael Wincott being stabbed is always is a good death. So it's in The Crow. Isn't that how he dies in Robin Hood?
Yeah, probably.
Probably. So I've always liked to see that. So that's why it's my favourite.
Yeah. Yeah. Alan Rickman runs him through.
Yeah.
In that. Yeah. Tim Curry, again, makes the most, because that's not like an amazingly funny line, but you're like, oh, what a line.
So much going on in the eyes.
He delivers it. And when he goes, love is wasted on the young.
Yeah. And he's just throwing pigeons in the air, which is not a very dastardly thing to do.
Uh-huh.
Your most valuable whatever.
I have never had such a tough decision to make.
Mm.
I don't think in the history of Clash Pod for this section, because you know my love for Tim Curry. You also know I do very much like Oliver Platt.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
So it's Curry versus Platt.
Mm.
And it's so hard to choose. And honestly, I can't believe I'm going to say this. It's Oliver Platt for me. It's Oliver Platt. He just nudges it because there are some proper laugh out loud moments and he is helped by the script. His jokes are funnier than Tim Curry's. He actually has jokes for a start. So yeah, I'm going with Oliver Platt.
I think this is why the film was such a treat when we were little, because I remember walking out of the cinema and doing, you know, running and I'm like, oh, what was my favourite bit and who was my favourite person? And he was like, I can't decide between Oliver Platt and Tim Curry. And it was like, what a brilliant, fun experience that was. Like, they got it so right.
Yep. Who are you going with?
I want to give it to. Well, I want to give it to Michael Wincott, but I can't because Tim Curry's just nudges it.
I know. Okay, that makes me feel better.
He is amazing.
Without Chris here, that's fine. That's 50-50. That's a 50-50 split.
But all three of them. I mean, I know that my Michael Wincott thing is a bit disproportionate, but Oliver Platt deserves it as much as Tim Curry.
Mm.
So that's good that we can both choose.
Love it.
What would you change?
I have a problem with the sniper who's there to take out the king because it's quite a pivotal role and D'Artagnan has his most exciting fight with him on the roof of the building. And I just wonder whether that could be the start of the Michael Wincott fight. And Michael Wincott, like, he's still got his sniper's eye, even though he's got an eye patch. That's his other skill. He's a brilliant sniper and he should be the sniper and their fight should start up there. And Porthos shouldn't save, and Michael Wincott should escape, and then they save D'Artagnan, and then they have the fight later. I know you're a fan of collapsing
characters. Collapse the shit out of it.
Either that, or tell me a bit more about the sniper. Like, he's there throughout, like, he's the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit too much of that. Like, Milady de Winter's, like, henchmen seem like sort of kind of iconic looking henchmen, and then they're sort of introduced and dispatched too quickly. So that, or you can't. Disney or not, you cannot end a movie by punching a guy into a lake. Like, he has been the villain throughout. He's been predatory with the queen.
Yeah.
And like, if you're going to punch him into the lake, he is obsessed with gold and he's got this gold armor and he sinks to the bottom.
He's
going to sink to the bottom because of his obsession with money and gold. Yeah. And he's so loaded down. Like the priest, Robin and Prince of Thieves, who falls out of the window because of all his gold.
I was just going to say, what if he knows the jig is up and so he fills his pockets with all his gold? We've seen that before.
We've seen that in the movie that is this movie. But I think if you're going for a sequel, then have him arrested and have him stripped of all his grandeur and everything and thrown into his own Bastille or chained up in his own underground prison.
Yep.
But something that sort of goes, he got his comeuppance, not... Is he just floated out of shot? Is he swum to shore? What's going on? It's not enough of an exit for your big bad.
I agree. Mine is very silly, but I think when Athos and Sabine are talking and he's like, I can't save you because you murdered people. And she's like, you fucking murdered loads of people. She doesn't say that. I think there should be a moment, it adds to the film, where they do run away together for like 5 minutes. He's like, God, Jen, you're right. Like, what am I doing? Like, why am I condemning you to death? I've been looking for you my whole life and here you are. You've done some bad shit. I've done some bad shit. Let's forget about it. They run off. They start a farm in Brittany. Or no, they don't. But there's a moment of temptation where he runs off with her and it's going to work and then it doesn't work and then he, you know, then she still has a jumping off the cliff thing.
Oh, they set up a plan. They set up a plan together.
Right.
Whereby he's picked the cliff and there's a bouncy castle at the bottom.
Right.
And when she jumps off, he stops her being beheaded. She jumps off, lands on the bouncy castle, and then in an epilogue, you see them on a farm together.
That's nice.
In Brittany. Or wherever.
Somewhere in France, maybe. Doesn't matter.
Just outside of La Rochelle.
For instance.
Perhaps near Rouen.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
They are close. Mm. That's it.
All right then. So, that is The Three Musketeers from 1993. Done. It is time for the verdict.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Right then. Chris's choices this week. Chris isn't here. Do you want to go first, Victoria?
Sure. I'm not going to mess around. I think it's pretty obvious. So it's The Three Musketeers, no contest. But let me tell you for why.
Okay.
So it's daft, but it knows what it is. And I do have the fog of nostalgia, and we shouldn't do that. And I know there's like 12-year-old self talking, but to be an adult, it is a film that hits those coveted four quadrants, and that is what they set out to do. So you know, how can you not enjoy it? It's got action. It's got a love story. It's got Chris O'Donnell for the youngsters. It's got the Kiefer Sutherland and Milady thing going on for the oldsters, and Oliver Platt and Tim Curry for the laughs. It's filmmaking a little bit by numbers because they're like, we want to get those four quadrants. But when they do, it's so amazing. As in, they set out to do exactly what they, you know, they did what they set out to do is what I mean to say. And you get a little bit of history and a little bit of politics and a lot of swashbuckling. Like, it, in terms of what they wanted, they've made a perfect film. For me, so it has to win. So I think Young Guns is just a bit patchy.
Fair enough. So that is one for The Three Musketeers from Victoria. I have this from Chris. Needed prompting, which is unusual. I was like, hey, Chris, recording this afternoon. Are you voting? To which he replied, yo.
He never says that.
Not a word that sits comfortably on his lips, even in message form. Yo. Can't remember Musketeers. So Young Guns, I guess. Someone's on fucking holiday.
I don't think he's seen The Three Musketeers. He was so dismissive of it the other week.
Well, he's gone for Young Guns. So that's one apiece right now.
Great.
Jeopardy! Jeopardy has returned to the show. It's The Three Musketeers from me. Yeah, I mean, just like, I don't have much to say. I just prefer the script, characters, tone, story, action, humour and performances a lot more. In this film, just those few things.
Yeah.
Then I did Young Guns. I didn't really like Young Guns. I kept that hidden.
Yeah.
Kept that hidden until now. Right then. That is a winner declared. It is The Three Musketeers.
Hooray.
Let us know what you think. There'll be a poll online. And Chris, I'm sure, will be, for the first time, interested in the poll's results and not as dismissive of it as he is when I mention it, because I don't like the result. But he might not care either. He's on holiday. Right then, let's look ahead to next week. Your choices, Victoria. Remind us, first of all, of the clue you gave on Monday.
Monday. The clue was, I will always take a bullet for you, apart from that one time I didn't.
And I like that clue because the films are...
Chris is going to do The Bodyguard and you're going to do In the Line of Fire.
Yeah, we are. It is The Bodyguard versus In the Line of Fire. I'm excited.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen The Bodyguard.
You're in for such a treat. I mean,
I've seen In the Line of Fire and I like that. And a lot of people tell me The Bodyguard's quite good.
It is. Of course it is. Right, it's going to be a very hard decision for me personally.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that is your pairing, and a good pairing it is from Victoria. The Bodyguard from 1992, available on Amazon. In the Line of Fire from 1993, available on Amazon. Did you know that?
No, sorry, I didn't. Mm-hmm. Wait, no, I didn't. Right. Apologies. I never do that bit. I'm sorry.
They're all over the place. I check everywhere for them. If you have a free service or not a free service, but if you've got Netflix or Sky, Chris is going mad right now. If you've got Netflix or Sky, you could maybe check those. I just don't want to point you in the direction of Amazon if you've got a service where it's already on and you get it for free. You know how it works. So, Bodyguard versus In the Line of Fire. Have I said that, Chris? Come on, can we get out of here? Yes, sure. Sorry. If you haven't, please subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod. Don't forget, November the 11th is our live show, Inhale Too Quickly, in London, Stoke Newington, at the Loading Bar. Tickets on eventbrite.co.uk. Search for Clash of the Titles. All the details are there. Back on Monday, talking The Bodyguard. Bye-bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.